and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Janice Cunning.
And I'm Michelle Malloy Dillon.
And Michelle, we're excited today to have special guest Wanda Deschamps, who is the founder and principal of Liberty Co. And Wanda and I worked together many, many years ago. And then thanks to social media and me following you, we have just reconnected over the last year. So welcome, Wanda.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's been it has been a while. I was saying to Michelle, I was double checking, when did we work together? I feel like it's sort of like it was a long time ago, but we won't go into that. Past life, exactly. So yeah, we're excited. You wrote or shared with us a primer sort of that you have on Neurodiversity 101, which is, we're going to link to in the show notes, and we encourage everyone to read. But we wanted to talk a little bit today about your work and what you do, and then also your own journey, how you came to this. So let's start with what is Liberty Co. and what is it you're up to in the world?
And what is neurodiversity?
In what order?
Any order you want.
Okay. Liberty Co. focuses on neurodiverse employment with a special emphasis on autism due to my own diagnosis at midlife. And neurodiversity is a term that was coined by Australian sociologist Judy Singer to describe differences in human brain makeup. So that includes autism, which I have and perhaps is already well known to our listeners, and to ADHD, which is probably well known to our listeners. It also includes some other conditions that perhaps aren't as well known, like dyspraxia, dyscalculia. And there's so much more I could say. There's a long spectrum across the neurodiverse population. All individuals are unique and we have our own characteristics and traits. There are some common denominators, and that is we're known to have differences in communication and interpersonal relations from the mainstream population. However, again, there is a really long spectrum. And we do want to be appreciated for the individuals that we are. And so Liberty Co. focuses on neurodiverse employment because regrettably, the vast majority of the population is either unemployed or underemployed. And I'm one of the people and the folks I collaborate with. We're hoping to help change that.
That's great. Yeah. And so, as you alluded to, like I said, we kind of reconnected because I was following you on social media and I was so interested in what you were talking about. And so you did have this autism diagnosis, as you said, midlife. So tell us a little bit about what that was like and then what was the impact for you on your career?
So I was diagnosed a month before my 47th birthday. So it definitely was at midlife, and it followed the diagnosis of our younger son, and our older son had been diagnosed prior. And the reason I sought a psychological assessment is because my mental health was breaking down, specifically through the late fall 2016, winter of 2017. And then I actually had a complete breakdown at work 4 months, 4 years tomorrow. Mm. And I had a previously scheduled doctor's appointment the day after we received the diagnosis of our younger son, which was a few weeks after this specific challenge at work. And I said to the doctor, I'd like my own assessment. I think I have it too. And so what was it like? It was very clarifying for me because I always felt different. And obviously there's so much more I could say, when you get diagnosed at midlife, there's a story behind you of several decades. However, I think what's really important for folks to know is that not having a diagnosis means a lot of struggles. And I'm not saying that I got my diagnosis and everything was great in 24 hours. That's certainly not true. In fact, I heard someone mention recently, it's not the end of the diagnosis, it's just the beginning. Mm-hmm. However, it was very helpful. What did it mean for my career? I sought accommodation and that didn't work out. I essentially felt forced to withdraw my accommodation and I eventually lost my job. So I decided to become an entrepreneur. And what's really interesting is that my background is the charitable sector, as you mentioned, Janice, and that's how we know each other. And so I thought Liberty Co. was going to be focused on services for the charitable sector. And then the more I became involved in autism advocacy and interested in neurodiversity generally, I realized, no, this is going to become my work. Mm-hmm. So even pre-COVID, I reoriented Liberty Co. And this is what I'm doing now.
How did having a diagnosis at midlife help change your story? Because you mentioned your story.
I guess if you mean story in the way I'm about to share it, if this is okay with you, what I mean is my narrative. And so my view of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I lived my life, really the simplest way to say it is that I lived my life more based on what I thought others' opinions were of me, as opposed to consistently following my own instincts and being really true to my values and principles. And then once I made the decision as part of getting to know myself a bit better and having this diagnosis, and I realized, no, Wanda, you are not going to live so reliant on other people's opinions of you and other people's opinions of different issues. And no, you're first and foremost, it's about you and how you view yourself. Things really changed.
Yeah, that sounds so powerful.
Yeah. I lived my life as real Wanda. That's what I say. I know it sounds overly simplistic, but and maybe a little bit difficult to understand. You know, at 47, you started living life as real Wanda. Whose life were you living before? But this is real Wanda. And I found her later than I wanted to, but one article about my story, they entitled Better Late Than Never. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really apt description.
Yeah. And is it true? I mean, I do feel like I've heard that women and girls are often not as diagnosed as boys.
You're bang on.
Yeah. Janice. Yeah.
And in one of the articles I wrote, I share sometimes up to 4 to 5 times boys and men are diagnosed compared to women. And actually, you touched on something really important. And that's another reason why not only I got involved in advocacy, but then the more I delved into it, the more I realized my advocacy was going to become my work, because this is a huge issue that we need to change. And one of the reasons we need to change it is because not having the diagnosis poses so many challenges for women in the workplace. Mm. And add to that societal discrimination based on stereotypes and gender assumptions about women. I'm not saying they're not made about men, but they're especially made about women. Mm-hmm. And women suffer, and I suffered.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is really about making a smoother path for others. That's what I want.
Yeah. I mean, that's my impression of you. Like in following you, it feels like it's the intersection of feminism and advocacy around, you know, having autism and neurodiversity. That feels like you, right? That's how you're landing in terms of for me as your brand. And that's, you know, probably a big piece as a feminist myself of why I was like so attracted, you know, to reading your work. So yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. You're absolutely right. And even on my LinkedIn, I say, you know, my focus is neurodiversity and gender equity.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are the challenges in getting companies on board with hiring neurodiverse people?
Well, in Canada, we're still at the nascent stage of even understanding neurodiversity and even understanding, you know, how common it is. Estimates, and this isn't just in Canada, but estimates worldwide, 15% of the population is neurodiverse, but underdiagnosis persists. Look at me, I'm a living example. So we have reason to believe that number is a lot higher. So not only are we in the nascent stage in terms of understanding the possibilities in the workforce, we're in the nascent stage of understanding neurodiversity. And then as Janice just said, you add intersectionality to that, like gender and, you know, race and ethnicity, and we have further to go in terms of our understanding. So I'd say a challenge is that we still don't think of disability as a dimension of diversity consistently. So organizations now, for a number of reasons, COVID, a new evolution of the human rights movement that we've been seeing since the horrific murder of George Floyd. So organizations are starting to become more attuned to diversity, the strength of diversity, how prevalent racism is. And I'm not saying to take anything away, and I never do. It's about adding. Disability is a dimension of diversity. And being aware that there's 1.3 billion people around the world with disabilities. So estimates are that 6.2 million people in Canada and about 20% of the population, although again, diagnosis is still absent in a lot of cases. So that number could be much higher. And another challenge is that the vast majority of disabilities are invisible.
Right.
So the reality is employers could have neurodiverse members on their team. They could have lots of folks with invisible disabilities. Because of the stigma, if people do not disclose, then the employer doesn't know. And that's unfortunate. And that creates a tremendous burden on the individual, unfortunately, due to the stigma. But it's a loss for our society, too, in not understanding and, frankly, celebrating that, you know, disability can be a natural occurrence. To me, it was a natural occurrence. It's not that I was in, you know, a really horrific car accident and I became physically challenged. You know, I was born this way. I just didn't know it. I didn't see my different brain, but it's there. So I would say that number one is the biggest challenge. We really need to move the needle in terms of neurodiversity and disability being considered dimensions of overall diversity. And so in terms of hiring programs, retention programs, disability is there. And I would also say, just as an extension of that, you know, there's still not many people doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
More. There's definitely more, and there's different scales. It's still not, you know, it's still not super common. Yeah. So it's not on the radar of employers for all those reasons.
Yeah, remember I was like, I can't remember what podcast, but last year I was listening to this podcast and they had a guest and like she said this thing that stuck with me and I think about it a lot is like, who else needs to be at the table? And it's like, you just keep asking that question. I think it was related to marketing and, you know, product design. And I think that's the thing, like sometimes it sometimes can feel overwhelming when you start to learn. And I think for many of us, myself included, it's like last year was a year that we started to learn, you know, at least started the process. And but at the same time, it's, like, I think the intersectionality, it can be very exciting. It's like, oh, there's just like so much that I don't understand and, you know, can be curious about and be open to. And, you know, I think like what you're saying, Wanda, is like, we all work with different people, but we haven't like had, I don't know, like the confidence or permission or something to actually talk about like who we are, right? Like for you, it's like, you were always there. I worked with you, you know, and enjoyed working with you, but you didn't know, and I didn't know. And so it's kind of like, maybe that's the question is like, how do we just get to this place where it's like, we all feel comfortable enough to share like all the dimensions of ourselves that we can
bring our full selves to our work, because there are hidden gifts that perhaps haven't been permissible to let out.
Exactly. And we can learn from research in the workplace and from studies in the workplace that when people feel like they can bring them full selves to work and they're truly accepted, they're actually higher performers. Mm-hmm. And that's why organizations that really celebrate diversity tend to outperform their peers. I mean, that's one of the reasons. There's actually lots of reasons. I mean, another reason is that because they bring such a cross-section of thought.
Yes.
So if you have all the same people trying to design the future, you're only going to come up with the same solutions that all the same people have thought of. Whereas if you add diverse perspectives, then people think of things that otherwise might be overlooked or go unnoticed. And that's certainly something we say about the neurodiverse population, because different brain makeup, because we process information differently, we communicate differently. So sometimes we see things that our neurotypical peers might not.
Right. There's a perfect example of that. There's a woman here in Colorado named Temple Grandin who is autistic. Yeah, I can see on your face.
You know, Michelle. That's yeah. So funny.
She's a professor at Colorado State University, which is about an hour from me. And she has designed humane ways for cows to be less stressed in the slaughterhouse. And she's had a great influence on that industry because she thinks from the animal's perspective. And there's lots of interviews with her. You can Google Temple Grandin, but you know, there's lots of ways that she walked herself into the chutes and saw it from the animal's perspective and understood that the animal was being influenced by the lighting and things like that, that they were getting scared. So yeah, that's a great example of someone who was able to use their gifts.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny. When we adopted our dog, I was told to read her book, Animals yeah. Make Us Human, because she has a section on dogs in that book. And
yeah.
I am curious, Wanda, like, for, you know, as the founder of Liberty Co., what are you seeing that's going well in workplaces? Because, you know, our listeners are mostly managers and leaders, and they're keen to do better. So, like, what's going well that they could replicate and learn from?
Well, there's definitely a reckoning that's happening in the charitable sector and in the not-for-profit sector. So I see more interest in disability as a dimension of diversity as being part of that. Terrific how it got us here. If there is a silver lining, we're here. And so this is an opportunity to seize. Some people have said that the 2020s will belong to disability justice. Mm. If we don't seize this opportunity this time around, we're really going to miss the boat. The disability population is increasing because of our aging population. And a lot of organizations are really looking hard for talent. The thing is, they're looking in all the same places, a lot of them. And then they're wondering why they can't find talent. This is about not looking in all the same places. This is about opening your mind. This is about, in the charitable sector, having a base of employees reflect the base of your stakeholders and your donors. All donors, all stakeholders are not white, straight, abled men and women. Far from it. So many donors, newcomers, people of color, racialized individuals, LGBTQ2+, disability community members. So I encourage the charitable sector leaders, managers, team members to really think of it that way. And back to your point about a seat at the table. If your team does not reflect the diversity of your donor base, your stakeholder base, the population widely, then who could you add? Mm-hmm. And the neurodiverse community and the disability community has been discriminated against. We still are. What does this mean? In some cases, low self-esteem, depression, anxiety. You can't use the same job postings that you used 5 or 10 years ago and then think you're going to bring on new talent. You have to rethink those and educate yourself. Mm-hmm. But don't be fearful. Mm-hmm. And we can do this. Look at the change that we're bringing forward in terms of other dimensions of diversity. So we can do this in terms of disability.
That's great. So if you were, let's say, you know, I'm sure there's somebody listening today who's planning to hire, you know, in the next little while, what would you say to them as a nonprofit social sector, you know, manager? What would you like them to do differently this time when they hire?
Number one is take a look at your job postings. Do they really send the message that you are about inclusive hiring? Take a look at the language that you use. Take a look at the qualifications. Right away, are you sending the message, no, we're really interested in drawing from the same talent pool we have from the past 25 years. Mm. And look at your overall presentation. So look at your website. Is your website white, straight, abled men and women? Is your social media presence about white, straight, abled men and women. People can tell, people notice. People go to websites and they view social media threads to understand what the organization's about. And they can tell. If you don't have any photos, if you don't have any links, if you don't have content that is connected to all kinds of different diverse populations, well, then rethink, are you really committed to the tenets of inclusive hiring? And get advice. If you can't afford to retain someone who's a consultant in this area, there's all kinds of free resources online. So Accessibility Canada, Inclusion Canada, Mentorability Canada. Take a look. There's a new website that was just launched about inclusive hiring. And there's something like 200 free resources around disability. There is a free online course now available through UBC about autism in the workplace. Take the course. It's something like three and a half hours. You know, do these things or hope, you know, if not everyone on the team can do that, I understand, but you know, a few different people do a few different things. This will send a very different message to the neurodiverse population when you bring folks in for interviews or in your postings. If you say things like, we really celebrate, this is what we're doing, this is what we've done, this is what we're going to do, and you have photos that show all kinds of different people, that will ring true. And the neurodiverse population, and you know, there is a really, really long spectrum, but generally people with disabilities are known as being really loyal and hardworking employees. And we're very loyal, sometimes to a fault. And we're looking for employers that are really demonstrating the messages that they're extending. So chances are, if you do all this, you could get a really loyal, hardworking employee.
Thank you for that clear advice. I just love that. And it feels, the way you map it out, Wanda, it's like, of course, you know, to be able to attract employees that can be their fullest self at work and offer their unique skills and their unique ways of being will only make the organization much thrive in such a fuller way, and then also attract donors from all sorts of different segments of society and involvement from them. So it's like this ripple effect that I hear. And it starts with inclusion. I'll just say that word. Inclusion.
Yes. And I must say, like, I look at my cousin's children, you know, who are sort of in their early 20s, and I feel a lot of hope for the future. I do feel like they're the next sort of wave of girls that will be entering the workforce. And they grew up in high school, you know, very differently, thank God, than we did, you know? So yeah, I love what you said, Wanda. It's kind of like, let's hope that this decade really is a turning point. Let's hope that we use what we've all been through, you know, to like the fact that for many of us, like many people were working at home, had a little bit of time to maybe see things that they didn't see before, and that we can learn and do better. And along that lines, we'd like to give, as you know, people something to try. And so I know you have a hashtag for us to follow. Tell us a little bit about the hashtag and what we might learn from following it.
Yeah, Inclusion Revolution. I mean, it was really the moment my life changed. I was watching a live stream of the Disability Employment Panel from the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, 2019. And Caroline Casey and Paul Pullman, who have founded this initiative called the Valuable 500, were speaking. And that's about seeking commitment from 500 of the world's top companies to put disability on the agendas of the highest decision-making bodies in the organization. And they talk so much about the employment rates, rather really the unemployment rates of the disability population. And that's when I knew that I was going to use my platform, one of tremendous privilege, to champion disability employment. And they call it the inclusion revolution because it's those 500 companies are really revolutionizing the way we think about disability, especially disability employment. And so from that moment forward, I started using inclusion revolution and I use it consistently. And Caroline Casey knows that I do. And Caroline Casey is visually challenged. She's from Ireland. And Paul Pullman, who's really been the top CEO, he's now the former CEO of Unilever. And they're seeing this through. They have over 470 commitments. They're going to get 500. And Caroline was crying and saying, this is the first time disability employment has been on the world stage like this. And I was crying too. My life changed forever. And that's when I knew, Wanda, this isn't a choice. This is a responsibility because of your privilege. You will help create a smoother path for others so that they can disclose safely in the workplace, that even before they disclose in the workplace, they can enter the workplace and they can stay, because the vast majority of the disability population can be employed and we want to be employed. So that's the inclusion revolution. And I do hope we'll have some more followers after folks listen to this.
Nice. Yeah. I can feel your passion just ringing out and you're like, you know, talk about living your purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Really powerful. Thank you, Wanda.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're enjoying the show, please rate and review so others can find us. Now go put it into practice.